You're listening to the On-Call Nightmares podcast, and just about every week, I go out of my way to bring you conversations with a technologist who spent some time on call, and this time, I'm speaking with Tim Yokeman. He's a passionate builder and leader of support, DevOps, SRE, and engineering teams, and we had a really great conversation about what he's currently doing at Influx Data and what he's done before. I really appreciate speaking with him because he's got such a long and very interesting career where he's doing some really bleeding edge stuff nowadays while he's done what was really on the edge of new technology in his past. So I'm really glad that he spent some time to talk with me, and you can do the same. That's right. He found me. He started listening to the podcast, and he offered his time, and I'd like you to do the same. All you have to do is send me an email. That email can be sent to oncallnightmares@gmail.com, or you can reach out via Twitter. It's oncallnightmare or @jdestro. So what have I been up to lately? Well, I've been home for the most part. I haven't been in any conferences, which has been nice to be home because I've been working on some new content and coming up with ideas on how to expand the podcast, do some new things, maybe some best of episodes with some themes with previous conversations that I kind of just pull some clips from. I've been thinking about stuff like that. If you have any recommendations on new segments you'd like to hear in the podcast or something else like that, be happy to do that for you. So let's get into the conversation with Tim Yokeman of Influx Data and learn a little bit about, when things go really, really wet and wild for someone at a data center. Welcome back to the On-Call Nightmares podcast. And just about every week, I say just about, and this will make 30, a total of 30 now. I go out there into the world. Out there into the world, and I look for technologists who spent time on call. And this week, I've got Tim Yokeman. Hi, Tim.
Hey there.
So, Tim, you've got a pretty big background, and I don't want to minimize it because you wrote a bio that's pretty small as compared to what you're. The breadth of your experience, but Tim is an engineering manager now at Influx Data, and you've got a good 20 years of experience going back to time working in dial-up all the way into now working in hybrid architecture, containerizations. We're taking buzzwords now, and we're just putting them in a Yahtzee thing and then shaking it up and coming up with what you've done, man, because it seems like you've been around for a while and you've done a lot.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. It's interesting to talk to people who've just started in this industry and to say, you know, there was a point in time where we would listen on the phone to people's modems dialing up, and we could tell that they were having problems based on the bings and the whirs of the modem negotiating. It goes way back. And, you say on-call nightmares. I look back at the last 20 years or so and realize that I've basically been on call my entire career, which is a nightmare in itself, but it's also been perhaps one of the most rewarding experiences of my entire career too.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's always really cool to like look back and see what were the old nightmares and where we are kind of now. And I think that's why I've been doing this podcast, is that there's so many people, I think, where no matter where they are, I think in, this place in the industry, if you've just started or you've been in 20, you've got stories and you've got something that it's either going to be, wow, this was a great experience, or, oh my God, this was a terrible experience. There doesn't really seem to be a lot of in the middle. And I like to capture both because somewhere I think we can find the middle and find better ways of doing operations.
Yeah, for sure. And I reached out to you because I was thinking about some of the more interesting events that have happened in my career and how completely unrelated to pushing a bad config or just doing something that causes a cascading failure, something on the physical side that wasn't related to code at all. Was so instructive and so interesting to learn from. And even to this day, some of what I learned from these incidents really resonate and can we can pull value from a lot of these even old school issues just as much as the new stuff when you run into a Kubernetes problem that's new and intriguing.
So let's take a step way back, because we've already started talking about the where we are today, and I want to talk a little bit about where you started. And it's a pretty long time ago, not to make you feel bad about your age. That's not what I'm trying to do. But in the context of our modern internet, you know, you started in the late 90s working with dial-up, and then eventually going over to Verio. And Verio was a pretty big deal, like late 90s, early 2000s, as far as just providing internet and DNS and all these things to the world.
Yeah, they had an interesting model. And so I was, when I started, it was kind of an interesting scenario where I was just graduating high school and I was annoyed because there was a guy who had compromised one of the FreeBSD hosts that I was using. And I took it upon myself to kind of figure out, okay, what is this guy doing? Where is he connecting from? Let's mm-hmm. figure this out and track him down. And you know, that just snowballed into a conversation with the small provider that I was using at the time. And lo and behold, I end up working there. And so Verio came along, and they had a strategy of basically buying up regional internet providers, mm-hmm. mashing them together, and building out this huge provider. Yeah. I'm not sure if they wanted to take on like the AOL of the world, but they built a huge, huge company out of all the small constituent parts.
Yeah, I remember it was a big part of like just a consolidation plan that they had. And then eventually it became, now we have too much and we can't really afford what we've bought, is what it came towards the end. At least that's the way it looked outside looking in.
Yeah, I mean, it's challenging to run an internet provider that does everything from dial-up through hosting and leased lines and DSL and all that good stuff. But when you buy like 100 or 200 of these companies and try to mash them all together, you learn that operations are entirely different, how issues are handled, how tickets come in, what customers expect. There's so much difference there. And it was really interesting for me because I was out training people at a kind of a nationwide call center how to deal with our customers. And every single person there was commenting how different it is from every other provider they have. So when they get a call that comes in, they didn't know what they were going to deal with. And in a sense, though they weren't on call, every call was like being paged. You don't know what to expect. You don't know what's coming up next.
So the next kind of step in your career is you bump over to Playboy Enterprises in a time where, 2000 to 2005, and we're talking about the edge of providing video content and the really early big CDNs that people had to create on their own because they didn't exist. Talk to me a little about them, because this is, you know, I had a little early time in adult when I was getting started working at a provider. And the one thing that I saw more than anything was just the bleeding edge aspect of it. So maybe you could talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, it was really the golden era, it seems, in retrospect. So at Playboy, it was, you know, you say Playboy, everybody thinks of the magazine. But back in the day, when I was there, they started up what they called the Cyber Club, which was your pay-for-play type deal. Mm-hmm. There weren't many membership services out there at the time. So all of the software was built in-house, from user management, subscription, billing. Everything was done organically and in-house. It was a really small team. On the operations side, we only had three or four people tops, mm-hmm. Which is kind of amazing to think about at the time. And yeah, I mean, we were building out our own infrastructure. We had data center space out on the West Coast and here in Chicago, which is where Playboy was based. Mm-hmm. And we managed all of that. And we worked on directing traffic to the node closest to the end user. We were really mindful of speed and accessibility and just getting content to people as quickly as possible. So yeah, I mean, we really were at the forefront of building a lot of the building blocks of what's now considered just table stakes, like, resilient DNS and DSLB stuff and being able to have a robust CDN. So you can take maintenance and not take your site completely offline. A lot of fun and a ton of learning, in that space at that time.
I really have to agree. Just the amount of education I got around how to get the most out of the gear that I had, especially around video encoding, a couple years later, once the tube stuff started, it's really amazing. And the amount of pressure that was put on providers to have faster links because of the amount of content that was being provided, and maybe it was adult, maybe it was non-adult, but the fact is that we saw a transition, and a lot of it came from people who needed to provide video content to people that were going to pay for it, period.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's still to this day that there are pioneers in the video delivery space that are in the adult area. And it's just fascinating to see how various parts of the internet push the envelope with technology. I mean, we were back at Playboy, we were using cutting edge storage technology. We started doing some outsourcing stuff that just wasn't done commonly with content providers at the time. Mm-hmm. And we had people from large news organizations, three letters that shall remain nameless, primarily in the UK, that would ask us how we were doing things, because it was really, we were both kind of learning at the same velocity. And yet here we were, a very small ops team talking to huge established companies who were at the same point in their online evolution, trying to figure out how to deliver content as quickly as possible with what we had, because we didn't have a cloud then.
Gotcha. So now you jump forward a couple years later, and you take on a much bigger role at Server Central, and there you're kind of from hands-on all the way to managing people. You're basically director of technology operations. How many people were you seeing underneath you at that point? Like, how many directs did you have, and how many did they have, et cetera, et cetera?
Oh, it was pretty crazy. You know, Server Central is a small colo provider. Started out downstate Illinois, hosting content out of a dorm room, and grew into a provider in Chicago with multiple POPs in Chicago, but also overseas and throughout the U.S. And when I joined, there was a network operations center, small group, handful of people, 24/7. But we really needed to expand with multiple facilities in Chicago and elsewhere. So, you know, ultimately I had, I think around 50 folks that were either running data center operations crews or actually out there racking and stacking gear, dealing with customers, you know, the full life cycle from pre-sales to turn-ups, migrations. I mean, you basically the startup mentality that you come into today, where you wear so many different hats. You do what needs to get done for the customer.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of why I'm always drawn to startups. In a sense, I flip flop between the bigger companies and the startups, because there's just so much to learn when you get thrown into situations that are not necessarily part of your wheelhouse.
Understood. So now you come along over to Compose, and you end up helping, being part of running their SRE team as a director. Yeah, you were there until eventually the IBM acquisition happened, which was a big deal. What was it like kind of making that transition from, you know, a go-getter kind of place that Compose was to being part of Big Blue?
Oh, it's pretty crazy. You know, we use Slack at Compose to talk to amongst each other, because we were basically 100% distributed. I think everybody uses Slack these days. And, you know, we had maybe 40, 50 people in there, and it was a nice small community. And then we join IBM, and there's channels with 10,000 people in them. You know, well over 200,000 some people on Slack. I mean, it was just, you think of the Twitter fire hose of trying to absorb information. Well, this was having IBM say, oh, now we have a managed database provider. I don't need to run databases on my own. Let's go talk to them. And so, you know, I would wake up in the morning and have dozens of messages from people, and just a constant scroll of, hey, we want to do this, we want to do that. Which was great, because obviously we filled a need that they had, but it was certainly different from startup days, where you're really clawing to get every customer, and you have a lot of focused time on solving tough problems. And it just became kind of like we were an internal vendor of sorts where people were clamoring for the product, which is a great feeling.
Sure.
But it just a different context, just a really different feeling.
So then now we go to modern day, and now you're the engineering manager over at Influx Data. You've been there since around December. They're doing lots of really interesting things, and we'll get to talk specifically more about what you're doing there kind of later in the conversation. But I know it's another database as a service. You want to just give us a brief on what Influx is?
Yeah, so Influx is popular for InfluxDB and the tick stack. So a lot of systems monitoring. It's at its heart, it's a time series database. I can't seem to get away from databases for whatever reason. And I actually started there because at Compose, we were going to launch InfluxDB as a hosted solution. And that's where I got my first exposure to it.
Gotcha.
It's super easy to monitor systems and collect metrics and pop up dashboards and all the fun stuff that you might do on a day-to-day basis to get visibility into your infrastructure or IoT type stuff. I joined Influx primarily to see what we can do with our cloud solution. So hosting databases, basically the same stuff at Compose, only in this environment, a little bit more Kubernetes based and containers, mm-hmm. and just really, really exciting, fun stuff with a smaller crew. Than you might have at IBM, where you have, like I was saying, 10,000 people in a Slack channel. That's not an exaggeration.
So it's a more focused group of people who are working on a product like you would expect at pretty much any startup, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's just this excitement of trying to build something new from scratch and put it out there and see what people think of it and get that feedback and be able to continually iterate and just improve repeatedly. I mean, that's so exciting to me.
Very cool. So let's now get back in the Wayback Machine. So we've given everybody kind of an introduction to where you are, and I didn't ask the whole, well, let's talk about the first time you were on call, because let's face it, it sounds like you've been on call pretty much your whole career. So let's get into the rules then, because the rules are the important part to make sure that everything goes to plan in the podcast. We've already gotten through who you are, how you got here, and now we're going to talk about something that happened. But before that, we're going to remember the rules. And we don't incriminate yourself ever. Don't incriminate yourself, because you know what? Nobody wants you to get in any trouble. You don't want to say, I did this and let's not do that. Don't incriminate others, because we are blameless in how we do our retrospectives, and help us learn, because this podcast is just one giant retrospective. So let's hear an interesting story from an on-call incident and kind of how it, I don't know, turned into a nightmare.
For sure. And I will step back one second and say I've been on call long enough to where I actually did have a real pager, was excited to have a two-way pager, but the worst part was having Nextel phones where you would be awoken by a chirp followed by a grumpy coworker just talking at you. So. I am so glad to not have Nextel phones anymore. The story that really I've told a few times and I still find useful to think about is back in the colo days. So we were running colocation services out of facilities, basically leasing space, bandwidth, and hands time. And small group. So one night we decided after work, we were all the founder and some of the folks at the office, we were going to go out to dinner and just blow off some steam. Small group, we all fit in one car, you know, it's that type of team. So okay. And we're enjoying our Brazilian steakhouse meal, getting sufficiently stuffed. And it was a very cliche, almost movie scene where almost in sequence, everybody's phone starts to vibrate. And at that point we were all on call at multiple levels. So it was weird that everybody's phone was buzzing at the same time.
Sure.
And so we're looking at our phones and then we look up at each other with just like fear and confusion in our eyes. It turns out the on-site data center staff was reaching out to basically everybody in the company because there's water in the colo.
Oh boy.
not something you expect. You know, it's kind of like, wait, water, like where? Is the office there wet? You know, is the water fountain leaking? No, actually, there's water falling onto racks.
Oh, boy.
So we quickly pay the bill, and we all pile into the owner's car, and he's as confused as everybody else because we have no idea what the scope of this is. You know, we're trying to figure out what's alive, what's not. You know, clearly the phones are working, so at least we know that's up. So we haul over to the data center and rush upstairs, and we find that, in fact, there are several racks that where there's water cascading from the ceiling into the racks. And there's actually water shooting out of the floppy drives. And this tells you how old this is. There are still servers with floppies. Yeah. And it's one of those surreal moments where you look at it and you're like, huh, you know, the lights are still on. They're still flashing. But there's water coming out of them. That cannot be good. So, you know, at that moment, we didn't know what to do. I mean, we had never thought about this. We never planned for this. We had no clue how to react. You know, one guy's climbing up on a ladder looking to unplug the PDUs, you know, thinking, well, let's just shut everything down. And other people are looking at him like, yeah, water and electricity don't mix. Maybe you shouldn't be doing that. So we're all standing there trying to figure out, well, what do we do next? So you know, this is one of those things you never expect. You just don't think that a hole on the roof is going to happen and you're going to have water pouring into your infrastructure. It was only a few racks, so it wasn't everything. But what do you do? You know, it's like, how do we proceed? So first thing we do is we get the facility to shut power down. And we tell them, hey, there's water in here, which they didn't even know about at the time, which was interesting. And they had the same reaction we did, kind of the looking at each other like, you're kidding, right? Water? How
did, no. That's not supposed to happen. Yeah, I know it's not supposed to happen. Let's find out why it is happening.
Yeah, and it's like, no, really, there's water and you need to do something. And they didn't really have a plan either. So, you know, we get the power off. And that was the first step. And the second step was, well, we still have water coming in. How do we get the water to stop running on our servers? And so we sort of rigged up a tarp up above the racks to divert the water off. And the facility had a guy go up on the roof and look for this hole. And plug it or put something over it at least. Mm-hmm. Because if you've ever been in a rain shower in Chicago, they're not very pleasant. They can get really, really nasty. And this was one of the nasty ones.
I'm supposed to go there on Saturday, and I'm really hoping it doesn't rain because I want to see the Cubs. So.
Well, it's 90 degrees now, so hopefully it'll warm up or cool off a little bit.
Cool off a little. Yeah, well, it's disgusting. As long as I can get at least an afternoon of no rain. I'll take it.
I think you'll be fine.
Anyway, so you got some rain in the data center. They at least start finding the hole to plug it up, but you're still left with several racks of wet gear.
Yeah, and this is very multi-tenant. So this isn't just one rack, one customer. This is a couple racks of gear and probably, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 customers maybe. You know, we really didn't know at that point how many customers were impacted. But the first thought was, we'll just get everything powered down and let's figure out what to do next. And we kind of, at that point, we broke up into teams and, you know, we said, okay, first of all, we need the NOC to start communicating to customers, figure out who's down. Let's identify all the systems that are wet and reach out to these people and say, hey, there's been a problem. And fortunately, everything was labeled with barcodes. So it was pretty easy to figure out who was impacted. But that person really needed to be away from the issue. They needed to be in an office just calling people saying, okay, here's what's going on. It's all under control. Here's what we're doing. And just keep calling people repeatedly. And it was one of the best decisions that we made at the time that I still tell people when dealing with emergencies is you need to have that point person for communication. You have to tell customers what's going on and make sure that they understand what we're doing to mitigate the problem, because you're not the only one freaking out. Customers are freaking out too.
Like not necessarily the incident commander, but a person who's assigned to be a communicator.
Exactly.
To just do communication to outbound, non-involved people. And that can be really important, because having someone to just say, look, this is the situation, this is what we're doing, and this is when we'll talk to you next. Especially in a tremendously massive, like, outage is important, because getting those three pieces of information of what happened, what's going on, and when you'll hear from us next, I think is just incredibly important.
Yeah, it really is huge. And I can't understate just how important it is to be open and transparent with your customers. You know, sure. If you have a problem, yeah, there's water coming into the data center. That's obviously, you know, whatever SLAs you have, who knows where that's covered. But look, your systems are down. We understand that they're down, and here's what we're doing to fix it. And you don't want that person to be someone like me or the other people that are sitting there soaking mm-hmm. wet, trying to figure out what to do next, because we're just going to be saying, I don't know. We're trying to figure this out on the fly. And communicating that out to your customers isn't the greatest thing in the world. You want somebody that can confidently say, here's what we're doing. You know, tell us your concerns, take that all down, take good notes, and keep continuously communicating with them. And this is, of course, before Slack, before you know, customers could tweet at you and say what's going on, and you could really blast out an update. So these are people that you had to call back, or they were calling in, you know, totally one-on-one conversations with support people. So, you know, once we got that done and really got that process rolling, and it really speaks to the people that we had hired, because everybody was so customer focused. And so mm-hmm. it was like, yeah, no problem. I'm going to take that. I'm going to go talk to these customers. It's great. Go do it. So the next step was, all right, let's get this stuff unracked and crack open all the chassis. Let's try to dry them out, I guess. So you can imagine, if you're thinking of a typical data center, you've got cages of equipment, and then you have us with dozens of servers with the tops popped off, puddles of water around them, and basically a bunch of box fans that we just happen to have in the office blowing over the top, trying to dry them off. And I'm not sure why we wanted to do that, because this was not SSD days. It's not like we were going to stick these servers in a bowl of rice and they would power up again. I mean, we're talking about spinning rust. You know, these systems, literally spinning rust at this point. You know, these hard drives are likely toast. Everything in here is just dead. There's really nothing that we can do to recover these things. But that's what we tried to do, because the thought was, let's dry them off and see what happens. Once we realized that, you know, we've been drying these things off, but they're still dripping wet, plugging them in is likely not going to result in anything good other than releasing the magic smoke. We had another group of people take inventory of what we had out there and what we needed to basically recreate. And we dispatched that group to go out and start racking up or find systems of like quantity so that we can get them started up, get the OS installed, because we had all this stuff in an inventory program, so we knew what people were running. Get these things reinstalled, get them in some capacity on the network so that we can get people back up and running as quickly as possible. And that was probably the smoothest part of the operation, because we had all of the details. So again, this is before cloud. You can't just say, give me 12 instances of what we just turned up before. It was all bespoke. It was all one-off. Yes, we're Pixie booting systems, so there's a little bit less manual work with installing. But after that, it's essentially the customer's responsibility to go log in and install whatever their apps are and things of that sort. And throughout this whole process, so I'm jumping a little bit ahead. One of the huge takeaways that we learned at this point was just taking notes. We were running all of this on the fly, so these were just decisions made in the heat of the moment, and we did tend to take a little bit of detail down as to what we were doing next and what the next plan was. And after this all wrapped up, that was huge. So
I guess, like, internal scribes, if you will.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, anytime that there's a big issue, like something like this, hopefully you don't have water pouring out of your systems, but you have somebody taking notes and just recording the decisions that are made. Because you'll find that you make a lot of great decisions. You make some decisions that make no sense at all. But they just fold into developing that continually improving response to problems you have. And also you can identify gaps in procedures and policies. You know, we found that we didn't have, like, this is really small, but barcodes all in the same location. Some of them were on the back of servers. Some of them were on the front. Why? We didn't care about that. But after we had this incident, it was like, all right, maybe we need to standardize on where we put these labels. You know, just sure, to make it easier to find out what we have. And structured cabling, things like that, that, you know, yeah, we did a pretty good job of, but in the heat of the moment, if we had done a little bit better, we would have accelerated the repairs that we needed to do. So, you know, getting notes together was huge. But at the end of the day, you know, getting this resolved really revealed some interesting problems. The biggest one was, you know, we got people back online. We got systems up for them, and the systems were largely a complete loss. Fortunately, insurance covers that, but insurance doesn't cover the data on them.
Exactly. It
never does. And we learned that some of our customers had great backups. They're all self-managed, so it was like no big deal. We'll push our code back up and we're all good, not a problem. Other customers said, oh yeah, our primary server was, say, server 2001, and our backup server was 2002, and they're racked right on top of one another.
Yeah,
about that backup plan you have. So it's stuff like that pre-cloud that you really never thought of too much. You figured if you had a separate machine, what's the worst that could happen? A hard drive dies, you got another machine there, you copy your data, no problem. But long term, yeah. What really came about, you know, in what I use this story to teach these days, is the fact that you just can't assume that data centers are bulletproof. You can't assume that AWS won't have a leaky roof, or that your zonal redundancy is actually going to be redundant enough. Mm-hmm. So I always figure, I don't know what's actually going on there. I don't know where my systems are running. I don't know where my data is stored. So I'm going to store it in multiple places, maybe different providers, maybe different regions and different providers. I'm really going to be careful with what I do and where I do it, because I don't know what might occur in these physical locations. And in the cloud, we've abstracted all of the physicality of it. It's all just this ephemeral out there in the environment. But ultimately, still servers, still in racks, still mm-hmm. subject to Mother Nature doing her worst. And you have to be prepared, because ultimately, AWS isn't going to fix your data. Azure's not going to fix your data. No one is. That's on you still.
Yes, I think that one of the things that we've done is in this industry is abstracted so much of the things that equate to heavy lifting or friction. And we don't recognize sometimes that there are environmental variables like you would have in anything that can impact you that you just can't plan for. We've seen things with data centers getting, waterlogged here in New York City after Sandy happened. There are two like huge websites like Tumblr and BuzzFeed that, made all these really great decisions on building data redundancy. And in the end, it was all in the same data center. And
exactly.
Mount to a hill of beans, as they say.
Yeah. And I remember, I think it was Katrina, when Katrina hit, there were providers where people were live blogging the fact they had feet of water in their facility and they were running low on fuel in their generators. And it's just, you never can tell what might happen. So you have to prepare for the worst. And, the other big takeaway that we had was, you get tunnel vision in these types of outages. You say, okay, there's water coming down on these two racks. Let's fix it. In retrospect, maybe we should have been doing rounds looking at all the rest of our footprint to make sure there wasn't water leaking elsewhere. We didn't do that because we were so focused on those two racks. And the same applies for any sort of cloud-related technologies or anywhere you might be deploying code. You're diagnosing an issue, but what's the blast radius? Have you really identified that? And have you thought about, like, maybe in advance, if something like this happens and you see an outage in one particular area, maybe you need to look at other areas to see if there's a cascading failure. And I use the term cascading again, it translates well into having water in your data center. You really have to think, where is the water going to flow next?
Yeah, that's a great point. So if someone's on call right now, what piece of advice would you give them? As either, let's say that they're 2 weeks into the rotation.
2 weeks into a rotation, I'd say embrace it. These days on call, there's been so many developments in how to handle on call and how to procedure, how to make procedures and doing retrospectives and having an owner operator model where you don't have developers throwing code over the fence saying, okay, just go run it. Everybody has a stake in it. And presuming you're working in an environment like that, being on call is where you're going to learn all sorts of good stuff. It's going to be a lot of dirty underbelly of the product. You're going to learn where all the duct tape is applied. And that might really shake you, but that's also how you're going to learn the ins and outs of a product. And you're really going to grow professionally by having those on-call alerts that hit you at 3 a.m. when you're groggy and you're trying to figure out what's going on. That's when I, at least in my career, I found that I've really felt super productive and like I'm really advancing my skills is when I'm faced with a problem I've never seen before and I barely even know what I'm looking at, but it's on me to fix it. And if you find yourself in that position and you don't know who you can call for support, that's a big red flag. When you're on call, you should always have a backup. There's always a release valve. There should always be someone you can lean on who's hopefully been there a little bit longer than you or is more closer to the code itself that can give you some hints and tips. And it's those types of pairing sessions when you pull that ripcord and you need the help that really you level up and you start to become a true subject matter expert in all aspects of what you're on call for. So if that's a software platform, you're going to learn about every component and you keep an open mind and don't get defensive, which I've seen happen a lot where it's like, well, this problem is outside of my expertise, so I can't do anything, you know, escalate. Mm-hmm. Try to take it on if you can. Try to take it on. Pull people in. Really take advantage of that situation to learn more.
That's some great advice. So let's talk a little bit about what you're up to lately as an engineering manager at Influx Data.
Yeah, so at Influx, we have a cloud platform, and it's been working really well, but we're releasing version 2. So InfluxDB has gone through a dramatic rewrite, and we're looking to offer that as a hosted solution as well. So what I've been involved in is building up an SRE ops team to put forth the infrastructure that will run on and to make sure that we're taking some of the best practices out there in the SRE realm, you know, like thinking about SLOs and SLIs, actually promoting the owner-operator experience. When I started, developers were not on call. It just wasn't a thing. And developers are now all on call. And it's something that you can't just brute force. When I started, I was very open about that being my mentality, that everybody should be on call. And because it's worked in the past and it really, you in a startup, at least everybody needs to feel like they're vested in the success of the product. And again, the best way to learn is really being on call. And so, you know, we've really been blessed with people who are open-minded, willing to get on call, have some questions because they've never been on call before, perhaps.
Sure.
But are totally, you know, jumping in and taking ownership. And by doing that, we've already seen improvements make its way out to our open source software based on what people have seen in doing internal monitoring and being on call and looking at problems that come up. So it really feeds into itself. So we're very pro open source. We're an OSS first company, and that's really where all of our passions lie. And what's fun for me is the fact that I'm working with a group that is really pushing really hard to find the problems and to take those problems that we have at our paid platform and make sure that translates into improvements on the open source side so that everybody in the community wins from that 3 a.m. call where something has gone wrong. Hopefully that 3 a.m. call results in a code fix that goes out to hundreds of thousands of people running InfluxDB or Telegraph or any part of our stack. It's super rewarding to think that those little things have such huge impact.
Absolutely. Well, Tim, thank you so much for your time today. It was really a pleasure talking to you about all these really interesting parts of your career and the reigning data center. Really appreciate it. Are there any other projects or anything you want to share with the listeners before we kind of wrap it up?
You know, I feel like on-call is something that we as a community need to really embrace more. And you know, the title of the show, On-Call Nightmares, it really is a big learning experience. And I feel like we should be taking our knowledge that we've gained over all these years and help the people who are not yet perhaps in the cloud, who are still deploying two systems in a colo facility, really push our knowledge down. So it's not necessarily a project, but it's a passion of mine to say, you know, we're really in the upper, 5% or so, I would say, of technologists that are really embracing cutting edge technology in the cloud. There's a lot of people deploying systems in data centers or in a closet in their office. And there's so much that they can learn from our experience. So I'd say people in my position, your position, listeners, write about that. Put it out there. Leave practical advice for people who are also coming up the same way that we all have. And let's bring everybody up with the experience so hopefully they can avoid the problems that we've faced in the past. And I know that to put a nice cap on it, at the data center we were at, they now have roof leak kits that are accessible and known about. And so if there is a roof leak, it's really easy to divert the water and get help as soon as possible. So lessons were learned all around that night.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Tim. We're going to wrap up. That was a great conversation, and I really do appreciate your time. So,
yeah, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
How can people find you on the internet?
I'm at Twitter, TKYocum, Y-O-C-U-M. I'm also at tky.io, where I have a little blurb about fixing on call and also fixing hiring, because I think hiring is kind of broken too. I look at this industry, there's a lot of things to fix.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks a lot. And we'll be right back to wrap up this episode of On Call Nightmares.
Well, that's it for this week's On Call Nightmares. Thanks a lot, Tim, for your time. I really enjoyed that conversation with you. And if you'd like to be part of a future one, just reach out, oncallnightmares@gmail.com, or reach out on Twitter @oncallnightmare or @jdestro. Really appreciate all of your listens, all of your emails, the tweets, all of it. Really do appreciate it. There's no podcast without you. And we'll catch you next week, where I have another conversation with a technologist who spent time on call. See you then.